evening, everyone, and welcome to this Sunday's special edition of English Evening. This is Dong Ying. On Sunday's show, we'll pick up some topics we had on weekday shows and recap them. Now let's take a listen.一个世界杯花絮，它主要讲的呢就是这个南非世界杯上很多各国的这个球员他们都吃些什么。各个国家的这个球队呢其实都派了非常顶级的厨师在这个球队里面。Chef Geoffrey Murray can barely weep with this kind of bouquets out of his own oven fast enough since the French World Cup team set up camp at his hotel. And croissage and also crepe and also batches or the brioches are also in hot demand at the Czech Republic, Czech Pazula Resort Hotel and Spa in coastal Kansas. As staff pull out all the stops to cater for their pampered thoroughbreds. He said, we were doing 10 baguettes and then it got up to 80, 90 and now it seems to be up to about 120 per day, said Murray, head chef at a luxury hotel the French are calling home. The baker is just over the moon. The Uruguayans packed a ton of prime grass-fed beef from home as well as plenty of doche de leche, a creamy caramel spread ubiquitous to breakfast tables and desserts in much of South Africa, said a team spokesman Matthias Farrell. Argentina's coach Diego Maradona was not so lucky. Agriculture officials put a stop to his team's plans to bring in steak supplies from home, said Lin De Torio, chef at the University of Pretoria Center where the Argentines are staying. He said they never got a permit to bring the beef in. They wanted to, but it was declined, she said, adding that the flamboyant Argentine coach had failed to live up to his diva reputation so far. 那么刚才提到的呢就是几个国家队的这个大厨们 chefs 要像是在法国国家队呢这个大厨他们就带了各式各样的这个法式的面包有牛角面包有奶油蛋糕还有各种各样非常 delicious 的这个甜品大厨们呢他们接受采访的时候呢说呢最开始呢他们只是做了就是几十个后来呢每天这个数量都在需求量都在增长比方说从80个增加到90个后来呢每天要做120个这样的蛋糕真是供不应求他说呢 The baker is just over the moon 大家都忙开了那像是在乌拉圭队呢乌拉圭的随队的这个大厨他说呢他们从国内带来了非常好的这个牛肉供给充足同时呢有很多丰富的这个早餐还有甜品来供队员们来分享像是阿根廷队的头号大腕也就是他们的教练的马拉多纳却不是那么走运了马拉多纳呢他是想在阿根廷国内带一些非常好的这个牛肉但是呢当地的官员是不允许他们带自己的食物去 Or let's say take a look at the typical South African snacks like biltong, a shred, drift, a dried beef are not everyone's taste but at many teams have flown to players' favorite nibbles to help cure homesickness during the long weeks of a sporting competition. In Rustenburg, Wayne Rooney and the England squad are having their meals overseen by celebrity chef Tim De Anse, who has previously been personal caterer to Hollywood stars including Leonardo DiCaprio. And he describes the English players as racehorses who need to be properly fed to perform their best, but he has been living up their healthy diet with afternoon snacks like mini hot chocolates. 那么我们再看看英格兰队，英格兰队他们的这个随队的大厨呢是非常有名的这个厨师，他的名字呢叫做Tim。Tim 呢曾经是好莱坞的巨星莱昂纳多·迪卡普里奥的私人的这个厨师。那他随队的这段时间呢，他说像是鲁尼啊，像是其他的一些英格兰的球员，他们的这个对食物的要求还是比较高的。同时呢，在这个食物的供给上呢，这个大厨他还说要得当分配。 个得当，因为呢这些运动员他们非常能吃，他们非常容易饿，但是呢也不能给他们吃太多的好吃的，这样呢会在比赛当中呢可能会增肥。比方说像非常漂亮的这个巧克力的蛋糕啊，他们都会提供迷你型的，叫 mini hot chocolates 来提供给他们，不会使他们吃的狼吞虎咽的。还有呢，就是我们来看看墨西哥国家队 Mexico squad have had to wait in line for their beloved tortillas as one local supplier has given priority to his regular customers, the team spokesman said. The only one who cooks for the Brazilian players is squad chef Jamin Michel, who stocks upon on plenty of guava paste at home for those in with a sweet tooth. World champions Italy have made their base a real home from home thanks to a plenty of supply of pizza, pasta, and the Prosecco, served by Italian barmen flown over specially. Some more adventurous World Cup players are also embracing local delicacies. 那么上届冠军的意大利队呢，他们也是把这个当地的驻地呢变成了一个非常意大利式的驻地，里面提供非常丰富的意大利美食，像是各种各样的比萨饼啊、pasta 意大利面条啊，各种各样的意大利地道的美食，也是他们很多队员呢没有这种思乡的烦恼。So here are the secret ways of this, how to, you know, go so far at the end of the FIFA World Cup. Maybe they have to feed their, you know, players very well so they can play a really good performance. We are living in the 21st century, and I think young people, especially some adults or senior people, they can use how to use internet, how to, you know, use internet to help their career. But here, there is, according to a survey, does the internet make you smarter? Should you go? Digital media have made creating and disseminating texting, sound, and images cheap, easy, and global. The bulk of publicity available is media is now created by people who understand little of the professional standards and practice of media. 那么这个最近呢有调查显示，这个互联网真的能够使人变聪明吗？有的人说呢，可能会使人变得更加的笨。那现在呢，大量的公开的媒体信息都是那些比方说很多的非专业的人士呢，都会对专业的这个一些术语啊，都可以在互联网上搜到。比方数字媒体呢，已经使很多文本、声音和图像的信息的制作和传播呢，也变得非常的简单。然而呢，这些很多像是业余的人士呢，接连不断的炮制一些已经在网上存在的一些作品，就损害了好作品的一些质量，还有同时也损害了一些满意度方面的文化准则，也导致人们越来越惊慌的预测将会出现混乱和各种各样的这种崩溃的事情发生。 But of course that's what always happens. Every increase in freedom to create or consume media from a paperback book to our other kinds of like YouTube or the other kinds of social networks alarms peopleaccustomed to the restrictions of the old system, convincing them that the new media will make young people stupid. This fear dates back to at least the invention of the movable type.那么经常使用互联网呢，也使我们变得懒于思考很多东西呢。比方说不懂的话，也不用问自己的这个老师，也不用求助于字典啊，或者是其他的这些书籍的信息，大家到网上一搜，成千上万的信息就在网上出现了。所以有的时候让事情变得非常的简单，非常的方便，但同时呢专家解释呢，这会让人变得更加的笨拙，因为这样的人呢就不去思考。Here, similarly, open source software created without managerial control of workers or ownership of the product has been critical to the spread of the web. Searches for everything from supernovas to prime numbers now happen at giant distributed efforts.And like a Kenyan crisis mapping tool invented in 2008, now aggregates citizens' reports that crisis the world over. Patients like a website, this kind of called a patient like me, designed to accelerate medical research by getting patients to publicly share their health information, has assembled a larger group of sufferers of low Gehrig's disease than any pharmaceutical agencies in history by appealing to share the sense of seeking medical process.那么如今呢，其实大家可以在网上搜到任何东西，所以呢也使得事情变得非常的方便。当然呢，并不是人们关心的每件事情都非常的值得搜索，比方说媒体信息越丰富，平均的质量呢就会急速的降低，而新的高水准的行业模式呢却在缓慢当中形成。今天呢，虽然大家能够在一些视频网站上全天24小时来观看很多滑稽的录像啊，还有其他各种各样的有趣的新闻啊，但是具有全球范围影响力的认知盈余的这种应用方法仍处于萌芽的阶段。数字媒体的泛滥呢，专家说可能会让年轻人变得笨。这种说法的前提呢，是认为我们无法把数字化所带来的自由融入到社会当中，无法取得人类当年把读写能力融入到社会的那种成就。那他的这种主张呢，基于三个假设：一是在不久的过去，我们取得了辉煌而不可替代的高水平的文化成就；二是当今的数字文化呢，被糟粕所充斥，缺乏值得一提的这个尝试和创新；三是年轻一代呢，不可能像17世纪的这个知识分子对印刷文化所做的那样，形成互联网繁荣时代的文化规范。但同样呢，专家指出有三点理由认为互联网会促进21世纪的文化进步。That always happens too. In the history of print, we got erotic novels 100 years before we got scientific journals, and also complaints about distractions have been rampant. No less beneficial of printing press than Martin Luther complained. The multitude of books is a great evil. There is no measure of limit to this fever for writing.And also the case for digital-driven stupidity assumes we are failed to integrate digital freedoms into society as well as we integrated illiteracy. These assumptions in turn rested on three beliefs that the recent past was a glorious and irreplaceable high watermark of intellectual attainment, that the present is only characterized by the silly stuff and not by the novel experiments, and that this generation of young people will fail to invent culture norms that do not for the internet abundance what the intellectuals of the 17th century did for print culture. There are likewise three reasons to think that the internet will fill the intellectual achievements of 21st century society. So now let's go to America. Let's see the volunteering situations in America. And volunteering hit highest level since 2003. Despite the worst financial crisis since the 1930s, more than 63 million people in the United States volunteered their service in 2009, 1.6 million more than in 2008, and the biggest rise since 2003.那么自从08年的金融危机席卷美国以来呢，在它的志愿者领域呢，这个数字呢到现在为止是增长幅度特别大的。主要呢是由于经济危机呢使很多人呢陷入债务的危机，同时呢大家都想怎么样能够找到方法去使自己能够有重新焕然一新的表现。这个时候呢，很多志愿者，包括特别是心理学方面的这个志愿者呢，就加入到这个行列当中，免费为很多有创伤的人，特别是精神创伤的人呢来进行开导。The Corporation for National and Community Services America said, an independent government agency said, volunteers heeding President Barack Obama's call for serve their communities contribute to 8.1 billion hours of services, which is equal to about $169 billion.As the economic crisis affects many individuals personally and sends shockwaves across the country, Americans reach out to help through service. 那么随着经济危机的打击呢，很多美国的一些失业人士呢，特别是受到次贷危机创伤的这些人士呢，他们更需要寻求一些服务，特别呢是在心理方面的一些服务，特别是需要一些专业的人士来进行开导，Through service, volunteers are supporting the vulnerable population hit hardly by the economy and helping to create a stronger, more stable future, the report cites. An average volunteer rate for 2009 ranged from 34.4% for parents and 30.1% for women to 22% for young adults and 21.6% for millennials and people born in 1982 and after.And Americans are following that call, but the expert said, I think the important thing to remember is that it is part of the American spirit of generosity. What is amazing that in his country is that people turn toward problems rather than away from them.Among states, Utah and like last country with the highest rate of volunteerism, followed by Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and also Alaska at the opposite end of the scale. New York, Nevada, and New Jersey had the lowest level of volunteerism. 那么根据整个美国的几大州的一个调查显示呢，像是美国志愿者这个人数最多的这个州呢是爱荷华州啊，还有明尼苏达州，还有像阿拉斯加这几个州的这个志愿者是最多的。那反过来呢，像是纽约、内华达还有新泽西，它的志愿者的这个人数是最少的。In large cities, the volunteer rate was highest in Minneapolis, Portland, and Salt Lake City, and lowest in Miami, New York, and Las Vegas, according to the figures based on the data from the U.S. Census Bureau. Now let's move on to popular American. 接下来呢，我们来听听今天的流行美语。那今天的 Larry 和李华要到 Bob 家里。Bob 呢，因为要搬家，所以把他的音响设备呢都卖给了 Larry。李华会学到两个常用语，第一个是 first dips， 另外一个是 shotgun。Let's take a listen.
I'm really glad that Bob gave me first dibs on his stereo. He knows I've always admired it, but I couldn't afford to buy a new one just like it.
我知道你一直很喜欢 Bob 的立体音响，可是又买不起全新的。现在他要卖给你，怪不得你那么兴奋呢。哎，可是你说 Bob 给了你 first dibs， 那是什么意思啊？哦，是不是说 Bob 第一个先卖给你啊？
Something like that. To have first dibs...Dibs, D-I-B-S, on something is to have the opportunity to decide if you want it before anyone else.
所以我真猜对了。First dibs 就是有优先的机会来决定是不是要买。Bob 让你优先决定是不是要买他的音响设备，也就是给了你 first dibs.
Exactly. For example, I know that you like my car, so if I ever decided to sell it, I would give you first dibs.
真的吗？我可以有优先买你车子的权利啊 ，Larry， 你真好。哎，这样吧，我记得啊，你爱吃我做的蛋糕，下回我再做的时候，你可以优先享用。You will get first dibs on it.
I like the sound of that. While we're on the subject, dibs has another use too. If I say I have dibs on the last piece of cake, then that means I claim it for myself.
Oh, dibs 还可以用来表示某种要求或权利。好，那我先说了，这块糖是我的。I have dibs on this candy bar.
Hey, that's the last one. We won't be able to get lunch until after we bring the stereo back to my apartment. Can't you share it with me?
Hey, 我已经说了 ，I have dibs on it. 这块糖啊，就是我的。
That's not very generous. You know, I would share it with you.
好啦好啦，我是开玩笑的。你可以和我一起分这块糖。
Thank you. You can have first dibs on the next candy bar you find.
对了 ，Bob 他还有那么多东西要卖， 他有没有也让你优先决定呢？
He gave me first dibs on some of his furniture too, but I don't really need anything right now. Well, we're here. Let's go get my new stereo. I'm sorry, Li Hua, but you don't get to ride shotgun on the way home. I need you to sit in the back and hold the stereo.
你要我坐在后座抱住你的音响啊？可以啊。可是你怎么说我不能坐 shotgun？我本来就没想拿枪啊。
You don't get to ride shotgun means that you can't sit in the front passenger seat. The front passenger seat is often referred to as shotgun. S-H-O-T-G-U-N.
原来 shotgun 就是指前面驾驶座旁的那个座位啊。好奇怪耶，为什么要用枪来形容一个座位呢？
Have you ever seen an old western movie about cowboys and Indians?
西部电影我当然看过了，只是啊，我觉得西部电影都很暴力耶，我不是很喜欢。
In the old days, it wasn't very safe, so there was often a person who sat next to the driver of the horse-drawn carriage. This person carried a shotgun to protect the carriage.
哟，原来如此。过去啊，由于不安全，所以为了保护马车的安全，坐在马车前排的人手上啊都拿着枪，前排那个座位呢就被称为 shotgun。真有意思哎。
Exactly. Do you mind if you can't ride shotgun on the way home?
没问题，我可以坐在后面保护你的音响啊。反正我经常坐在前座，偶尔换换坐后面也没关系。
Thanks, Li Hua. From now on, you always have first dibs on shotgun, no matter who else is riding with us.
Larry, 你说了可得算数哦。以后啊，不管跟谁一起坐车，我都可以有优先权坐在前座。太好了。Larry, 我们可不可以去吃午饭啊？那半块糖根本不够，我好饿哦。
I agree. Let's go.
李华学到的第一个常用语是 first dibs， 是指的是有优先权，另外一个是 short gun， 是指汽车驾驶座旁边的那个座位。And now let's move on to chicken soup for the soul.
All our hearts have to offer. Death and love are the two wings that bear the good man to heaven. Michelangelo. No classroom course I ever took prepared me for one of the most difficult lessons I learned during my nursing career. Feeling fully confident and armed with cutting-edge knowledge of critical care, I embarked into the incredibly exciting field of flight nursing. Life on the helicopter was full of ups and downs, literally.I was constantly placed in a pivotal position, impacting the way families dealt with instantaneous, life-changing events. During my first pregnancy, I worked with a pediatric resident who predicted my outlook on my patients would change dramatically when I gave birth to my child. I'd always felt I had compassion for my patients and their families, but her words proved prophetic and have echoed in my mind and heart many times since that day in 1984.I was called to a small emergency room to airlift a five-month-old who had stopped breathing. I was immediately confronted by a hysterical mother, distraught over the possibility that she had somehow caused this catastrophe. She desperately looked to me for reassurance that all would be well, based on the lab values...X-rays and the child's condition, I could not promise that. In those days, our helicopters were much too small to accommodate a parent, and this child was so critically ill and in need of advanced care that it became a scoop-and-run situation. In my haste, I failed to allow a momentary interaction between mother and child. I cuddled the little girl in my arms, and we flew with all the speed the machine could muster to the awaiting pediatric critical care facility. Her condition proved too critical, and resuscitation attempts were futile. As I realized this sweet mother would never again have the chance to hold her live, breathing, warm baby, a haunting feeling pervaded my soul, a feeling I would not soon forget. Since that day, and following the arrival of my four beautiful, healthy children, I have been faced with countless opportunities to extend healing to family members. My outlook on my patients has, in fact, changed dramatically. While I still carry charts, calculations, medications, equipment, and skill, I have learned there truly is no replacement for the human touch. Since most of the patients I transport are extremely critical, the window of opportunity for technology passes for many of them. Yet families still count on me and countless other flight programs around the world to deliver one last miracle. Thankfully, a God-given feeling of compassion encircles me when I realize the time has come to help heal the nurturers. I now allow human contact to begin the healing process for family members. I spend time with a distraught father several days after his daughter was killed in an accident. He came to pick up her purse left in the back of the helicopter. He begged to know of her last words, to know if she suffered, to know if there was anything he could have done to change the tragic outcome. Tears flowed freely as I reassured him she had been in good hands and given every opportunity available to her. We parted, having given each other a small measure of comfort. I arrived to pick up a three-year-old who had been found submerged in the family pool. 14 family members cried out, "Thank God, they're here to save our baby!" A review of his condition soon revealed his little body and brain had been deprived of life-sustaining oxygen for too long a period. His six-year-old sister stepped forward with his stuffed animal. He needed it with him at all times. Kisses were given, touching encouraged. Cautions for them to drive safely issued, and we flew to the receiving facility, teddy bear in tow. Gratefully, the little boy survived long enough for the family to arrive. Seeing it was hopeless, the father begged to hold him one last time, while he still feels alive and warm. We disconnected all technology and wrapped his son snugly in a blanket for his daddy to spend precious moments embracing him. I broke all the rules when I brought family members past the yellow caution tape so they could touch and whisper hasty goodbyes before departing from highway accidents, certain they will never again see their loved ones alive. I violated the posted hospital visiting rules and carried small children to their mother's side to kiss, touch, cry, and lie next to mommy on the way out to the helicopter. I'm asked by patients en route to trauma centers the status of their husband, wife, friend, or sibling. The looks in their eyes indicate their knowledge of the inevitable, and my heart aches as I try to soften the truth. How grateful I am for all that medicine has to offer, for living in a time when technology changes as rapidly as the second hand ticks. But I am more grateful for those opportunities when soul touches soul, when communication is perfect despite the silence, and when the only thing I have to offer family members is one last memory with their loved ones. 16 years have passed since I listened to the words that would shape my care of patients. I have witnessed untold tragedies, but through it all, my solace has been the gift of a last touch, a last kiss, a last word, and the hope that these moments would alleviate some of the suffering. I pray that other caregivers will learn this lesson sooner than I did, and extend not only all that technology has to offer, but all that our hearts have to offer as well. Janie K. Ford.
All right, and that was today's show. Hope you've enjoyed that, and we're going to see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
北京时间22:59，中央人民广播电台经济之声。让你永远领先一分钟。
Cookie 经济学，
欢迎来到 Cookie 经济学今日茶点：狗股理论（Dogs of the Dow Theory）。 狗股理论是美国基金经理奥希金斯提出的，没精力没能力钻研股市的投资人只要买进道琼斯工业指数中股息率最高的十只股票，再根据十强榜单每年刷新换仓，就能跑赢大盘。1975年到1999年，狗股理论的投资回报高达18%，市场平均水平只有3%。
瑞士一波路表为您准点报时，浪漫时刻一生相伴。